Today, I'm speaking with Mark Ruffo, who's the Chief Development Officer for Landesa, which is a fantastic and interesting organization. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Ben. I'm very happy to be here.
Thank you for joining our Global 20. I believe you're on the other side of the States at the moment. I'm in the UK, and we're going to be talking about the Global South and Asia. So there you are. That's a truly global discussion. I'm really pleased to talk to you a bit more about Landesa. I've got to know the organization over the last few years and been immensely impressed with the work you've done. But perhaps you could tell the audience what the story is around Landesa and how you came about and some of the things that you've been doing over the decades, because I know it's a long-established organization with a very interesting mission. So perhaps you could tell us a bit more about your work.
Yeah, thank you for that opportunity, Ben. So, Landesa does have a long history. So we've been doing work for 50 years now. And it started during the Vietnam War. So our founder, Roy Prosterman, was interested in finding ways to help decrease the recruitment of the Viet Cong of smallholder farmers. And so he was working with the US government and started a program called Land to the Tiller. And under this program, 1 million smallholder farmers were given land. And those who were participating in that project actually stayed with the land and embraced a rural economy life. And the impact of this was that recruitment by the Viet Cong amongst this population decreased by 80%. So it was a phenomenal success for that particular project in that context. But what it really did is it showed the power of how secure land rights can have tremendous impact on many things. In this case, it was impact on peace and security and really helping to provide that confidence and that security to stay engaged in an economic pursuit as opposed to joining a war effort. But it opened the door to all kinds of land reform efforts and really trying to unlock those benefits. So if I could, I'll just take a tiny step back and really describe what land rights are and how Landesa works, if I could. So land rights, and sort of this is a little bit of a legalese definition, but I'll try to soften it a bit. But land rights are a legal and a social guarantee to manage, use, and inherit land and the outputs of land through ownership or through long-term tenure rights. So depending upon a legal framework, it may be something that people in the United States are familiar with, which would be a deed, or it could be the formalization of customary land rights or community land rights. So different kinds of tenure rights, but the impact is the same, is that people have security in their relationship with their land. They know that they will be there in the future and that they have rights to the outputs of the land. And knowing that you have those rights makes completely transforms your relationship with the land. You make investments in the land, long-term investments, which can increase your productivity. You have security for your family. You'll make different decisions about family structure. You will bring different people into conversations about those decisions. So it's really a transformative thing to have in place. Even today, though, there's well over 1 billion rural people who don't have secure land rights. So there's a lot of work left to do. But if I may, can I tell you a tiny bit about how Landesa does work? So Landesa works to really change the systems around land tenure. So there's a lot of talk in philanthropy and global development about systems change work. And Landesa, I believe, does some of the purest systems change work out there. So we work with governments, with stakeholders, with advocates and communities to really change the legal system around land tenure. There's a really simplified version of this is that we do four things. We build evidence around the land tenure and legal systems that are very hyper-local. So we understand how land tenure is managed, down to a village level. And when we say we understand it, what I really mean is, you know, the government might have a set of rules and laws in place, but how those are actually implemented and enforced and viewed at the community level may be very, very different from what the intentions were when those laws were written. Or, you know, those laws may be antiquated and local implementations have evolved. So we really spend some time understanding the local situation. So we build a lot of evidence. Then we collaborate on reform with government to support pro-poor rural land policies, to really bring the community into that conversation and make sure that the system is benefiting that. Then we drive that change through education. We do a lot of supporting access to justice. So we make sure that not only our government stakeholders, but also community beneficiaries actually are aware of these changes, and we educate and train them so that they can actually access that justice. And then the final thing that we do is we capacity build, and we make sure that local communities actually have the knowledge and the ability to take these reforms forward on their own. So there's an exit point for Landesa. We leave, and we hope that the local communities have the ability to maintain progress on this land rights journey.
Absolutely fascinating and very well described. I certainly, when I got used to Landesa and the work you do, it took me some time to just realize the power of what you do when you're talking about such huge land masses and so many millions and millions of people and billions of people that this affects and the lives that it affects and the power of change in this area. But tell us more about the philanthropic journey of Landesa and how philanthropy has played a role in you in empowering those communities and working with governments and actually changing, which you have. I mean, you've, from my take, you've made a massive impact into quite literally millions and millions of people's lives through your awareness and interventions in the way that you've just described. But tell us about what the role of philanthropy has been behind that and how that continues.
Yeah, thanks, Ben. So, you know, the impact of our work, as you just mentioned, and helping millions and millions of people, it's really true. Over the past 50 years, we've worked in nearly 60 countries and have had an impact on what we calculate to be 500 million people. 550 million people have been impacted by changes that we have supported. So the impact is tremendous. And that's really the power of systems change. When you can reform something at a legal level, it's really powerful. This is durable, long-lasting change that can, when implemented correctly, impact all of the people in a country. But because of the way we work, we don't accept funds from governments, right? That, to us, that's a major conflict of interest. We are not going in and reforming a government with their funds and doing what they want us to do. We work with willing partners. We only work when a government asks us to help them do their work, but we do it with third-party funds, essentially. We do it through philanthropy. That allows us the freedom to maybe, you know, tell a government some things that they don't need or want, that they don't want to hear, right? Some uncomfortable information that, you know, to really improve the lives of your people and to make the right changes, this is what you need to do. And so it's a philanthropy driven organization. The majority of our work is supported through grants, right? We can projectize a lot of our work, but some of the most important work that we do is reactive. It's responding to a government request, or even just having a meeting with some government officials and some bureaucrats where they say to us, look, we see an opportunity to change some policies related to, smallholder tenure in this region. What should we do? And we will sit down with them and we will help them to understand, again, all those things that I mentioned before, the local context, what they need to do. But that's almost a spontaneous situation. You know, they may ask us to have that meeting next week. And the only way to support that kind of work is through unrestricted funds. So some of the most important donors we have are those that give us the freedom to respond to opportunities and to pivot when we need to. And that happens through unrestricted funds.
So there's, you know, there's some huge lessons out of that. You know, the power of philanthropic organizations to affect lives through this kind of intervention. I think that's the most impressive piece that you've talked about, but also the role of philanthropy providing you independence effectively, really, by, you know, meaning that you can back from a place of independence with backers that are where you're not conflicted, I think is the second really important piece of what you've just said. And then the third about the role of unrestricted gifts, which we'll come on to later on in our discussion. So I think this is a really interesting area for philanthropy, and I'm really pleased to tease this out. I'm aware through the work, and I was lucky enough to be involved in some work with the organization, and really impressed with how the work of land reform all those years ago has actually turned into some pretty big other big strategic issues. And maybe you want to talk through, you know, the current themes and how you're responding to those current themes, because I think what is interesting is how land reform, which is so important, has now become a very powerful tool in so many other factors that are so important in our world today. So maybe you could talk through the kind of issues that funders are funding and the kind of issues you're now tackling through the organization that's born out of the land reform discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we were started, really the interest there was about creating economic opportunities for farmers so that they wouldn't engage in a conflict-based movement. So economic opportunity, poverty alleviation are really the foundational elements to our work. But as land rights have grown as an issue and been implemented, and our work has been implemented in more places, we've realized that land rights are really foundational to just about every global development issue that's out there. So if we look at some of the huge issues that are facing the world today, you'll see that there's a really strong connection to land. And the first one, and this is one that is really near and dear to Landesa's work, is gender equality and women's rights. And the connection might not seem super obvious at first, but when we're talking about land rights, we're really talking in large part about inheritance rights. And land is usually, in most places, a family's biggest asset. And if a woman, a wife, or a daughter cannot inherit their family's land, there will never be a basis for gender equality in that legal system. And so in a huge way, land rights are the foundation for gender equality. So everything that we do and all of our work has a gender lens. We're always trying to improve laws and policies so that women are more equally included in land tenure systems. So that's just one example, but there's several others. I mean, climate change and all of the efforts around climate change are very, very closely tied to the land, right? And so when you're talking about climate change prevention and the fight against climate change, it's all about, you know, finding ways to implement renewable energy sources, to prevent deforestation, to sequester carbon. And all of those are land intensive uses. And if you don't have the right legal framework in place, you're not going to maximize these efforts. For example, if smallholder farmers are not included as stakeholders in carbon sequestration schemes, then you're not going to have smallholder farmers participating. And smallholder farmers still are in control of huge, huge percentages of land, particularly in the global south. And so it's really important for the legal land tenure framework to include them in order to be successful when it comes to climate change. Other aspects of climate change, adaptation, as communities adapt to, you know, rising sea levels and changes in rainfall, land tenure is going to be really important. If we're talking about moving communities, you know, distances so that they can continue to even exist because their land is, you know, going to be underwater, then land tenure is really critical for doing that in a orderly, you know, rule of law based way. So land just comes back and is really connected to just about every issue. The new issue that we're seeing a lot of resources flowing towards and a lot of attention being driven towards is the relationship that Indigenous people and local communities have with their land. IPLCs still have really strong connections to probably close to half of the land in the world. And if there's unsecure rights or any kind of ambiguity there, the behavior that those communities are going to engage in around their land is going to be not very forward thinking. There's not a long-term horizon there. And we know, an actual study just came out last week, that Indigenous people, when they have secure land rights, are better stewards of their land.
I mean, it's just fascinating the way it cuts across so many issues that are so important, gender rights and climate change, and then obviously inequality, because poverty alleviation has kind of, and that's something I have learned from my dealings and workings around this area, is that it's also profound the way you can really make a big difference in people's relationship with land and their ability to actually get out of poverty through changing their relationships to land. So I think that's, these are all so important issues, inequalities that we're looking at today. I'm extremely interested to kind of explore a little bit further the unrestricted gift. We've obviously, this is part of our 20 interviews, and I was very struck with one of the interviews, which was Steve Shirley, who talked about her work. She's given almost 100 million away, I think, about how she saw it as venture philanthropy, almost as a businesswoman that gets really involved and is very successful. So the money, it's not just the money, it's about the expertise and making the money work in the work that she's done around autism. And I was very struck, and I had the privilege of talking to some of your donors, particularly in Asia, about the kind of support they've given. And this is very significant and substantial support. And the way that they describe their support almost as an act of leap of faith, because in a way it was unrestricted, it was significant support, but it was philanthropy to support what hope would be a big outcome in terms of government change or land reform. Yet you can't really define that. You can't really define those outcomes from day one. It's a bit of a leap of faith. And I was inspired with particularly your donors in Asia, because that is a relatively new phenomenon to see donors, particularly in Asia, giving unrestricted grants where the outcomes aren't quite as specific, and it is more of a strategic kind of leap of faith to say, well, I'll support this organization because I think it will have a dramatic impact. And of course, they're all very happy with the impact that's been made. But maybe you could just reflect back on your thoughts around those kind of unrestricted gifts, and also the growth of that within Asia, and how do you deal with those kind of gifts and those kind of donors, and are they the more sophisticated philanthropists that we're seeing coming through? I'd be very interested to know your thoughts on that area.
Yeah, you're absolutely right that a lot of our work is, as I was mentioning before, is responsive work to requests from the government and relationship building in the government. And really what we're doing is we're trying to build momentum within a government or within an ecosystem to facilitate change, right? Everyone that we're talking to is interested in that end result, but the journey to get there is not well defined. And so we don't know, you know, what needs to be done and who we can recruit to become a stakeholder and a champion. And so the journey sometimes can be very long. And as you said, it's the outcomes, the short-term outcomes, can be really ambiguous. And so our donors have to be donors who trust us to do the right work, but they also have to believe in the long game, that it's going to take some time to change a law in a country of a billion people, you know, that is bureaucratic and can sometimes be plodding in its change, but it can be done. And so there is a leap of faith there, and we are lucky enough to have had a group of donors who have stuck with us for really long extents. So our work in China, for example, we started the work in China in the 80s. And so we've been there for, over 30 years. cultivating relationships, working with the Chinese bureaucracy to help them implement the plans that they feel are appropriate for their rural landholders. And sometimes that work is, you'll go a decade before you see real significant change. But in our experience, it does happen. And we've been fortunate enough to have those donors who have stuck by us to watch it happen.
And I think they're, been incredibly impressed in your reputation. It's all about trust as well and longevity. And I know you operate in many countries where others aren't operating because of that long trusted relationship that you've established. And I think that's a very important element for why people have perhaps supported you and have really enjoyed supporting you. And that's certainly my take talking to some of your donors. I'd be very interested. We've got a couple of things that we want to cover off before the 20 minutes have run out. One of them is really, we've touched on the sort of global south, and you've really pioneered the development of this kind of work in the global south. But what is your sense of what is happening and how important is the global south? We've talked a lot about it recently, and it's a very important issue in philanthropy at the moment internationally. But what's your sense of how important that is, and how are you developing your plans to make sure that that's integrated in your work?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical for Landesa, and I would say probably for any organization, especially ones that have traditionally been based in the global north. The trends in philanthropy are, let's move the expertise, the capacity, the decision making to the communities that actually are involved in this, to where the beneficiaries and where the work is actually done. And so Landesa's history is, we're an American organization and we did work in the global south. That's not how we look anymore. We're now an organization that has leadership across the globe, and we're on a journey to do this even better. We want our capacity to be driven by local communities and in-country nationals. And so we're in a process right now where we're doing a lot of capacity building in the global south. All of our work is in the global south. We should have all of our capacity and all of our knowledge and decision making in those places. And so that's the journey that we're on right now. It's not an easy journey, right? It's a very big change in perspective for us as an organization, and it's expensive. It's not something that just happens freely. It takes an investment.
It's such an important issue, and I think maybe we should circle back on that very issue at a future Global 20, because the Global South is, it's absolutely fascinating what is happening in that philanthropic marketplace. So I commend all the work you're doing and effort you're making, because that's going to be the next phase for the organization. I think just to wrap this up, and it's a question that everyone would be dying to ask, is obviously your huge gift from Mackenzie Scott. And, maybe you can tell us more, because certainly when I read that just recently, because it was announced only quite recently, I could say I nearly fell off my chair, but I'm not surprised, because you are the organization you are. But were you surprised? Tell us a bit more about that gift and the magnitude of the gift, and how have you responded, and how have you worked with that new money?
Yeah, the gift was an absolutely spectacular and transformative gift for us. Were we surprised? Yes, initially we were completely surprised. It's the way Mackenzie Scott, was making her gifts was, she did all of the work in the background and the gift would come. And so when we heard about it, we were thrilled, absolutely thrilled. And it's really opened so many doors for us. Not only has it been a huge vote of confidence in Landesa, but it's really given us the opportunity to make investments in the organization. All of those deferred maintenance things that any nonprofit has on the books, we're able to address those and, really turn ourselves into a stable, secure organization that's going to be healthy and effective in the long run, and, have the capacity to do the work that we need to do. It's helping us to pay for that journey that I just described to you about becoming a more global organization. And it's going to have impact. We think that by 2027, we're going to help 400 million rural women realize the benefits of strengthened land rights, which is not something we could have done without this kind of infusion.
And you can share with our audience how much the gift was. I know it's in the public domain, but.
It is, yeah. So it's a $20 million gift, which, you know, is larger than our annual budget. So.
But for all the reasons that you've just outlined, I can see why a smart philanthropist would direct money towards you and look at the output, look at the incredible impact that is going to make. And, you know, unrestricted giving at all levels. But when we're empowering organizations at that level, it shows real confidence in the organization and what you've done in your history. So I think that's probably a nice way of wrapping this up. Mark, absolute pleasure to talk to you as normal. A real insight, fascinating area, which I hope everyone has now gained a real insight into the importance of land reform, but also the importance of strategic philanthropy and organizations like yours getting those unrestricted gifts to really make a huge impact in so many of these vital areas across the world. So thank you for sharing your story, the Landesa story, and thank you for participating as part of the Global 20.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for doing this, Ben. This is a really important series.
Thank you.